You're listening to Last Word Radio, where you get the last word.
Welcome to the Belief in the Magic podcast, as presented by LastWordOnSports.com, where you get the last word. I'm Oscar Elliott.
And I'm Christian Holmes.
And today we're kind of deviating from the norm with what we talk about on the podcast. A little less Leafs, although there is some news to come out that we'll touch on. John Tavares was just announced today that he sustained an injury at the World Championships. And that it's... I don't know. He seems to get to injuries at the national tournaments. Like, name a better duo than Tavares and injuries that with Team Canada.
It's unfortunate what's going on with him there. He seems he can never catch a break when he goes across the pond to represent his country.
Breaking right now, the Toronto Maple Leafs announced today that defenseman Travis Dermott will undergo shoulder surgery on Friday, May 10th. He is expected to miss a minimum of 6 months.
Ouch. That sucks.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Not the type of news I want to get.
Yeah, so all the injuries are sort of coming out now. Hyman had his injury that he played through during the playoffs. And Tavares, obviously, today, and as well as Dermott now.
Mm-hmm. It's tough. The injury bug is really hitting Toronto right now. Although it doesn't really matter, as long as 6 months isn't going to get you back before the start of the training camp. But, you know, it could be much worse, unfortunately.
Yeah, but, probably just around start of December, mm-hmm. like November time, he'll be back on this timeline. So, yeah, that's a rough loss for the first 2 months of the NHL season for the Leafs. And having a healthy lineup would have shown us whether or not Mike Babcock was actually going to change. So, and I've had some time to sit with that since our last podcast. I was a little, I think, too critical. The Leafs were very good at 5-on-5 under him. I think what they need to do is like get rid of DJ Smith and Hiller and redo the special teams people.
Mm-hmm. I'm with you on that. Honestly, like, you hear a lot of people say it too. Like, Mike Babcock took a 30th place team that, you know, won the lottery draft to a team that is like surpassing 100 points per season. So, yeah, it's unfortunate that he can be a little bit stubborn, but I have a feeling he's going to change his ways at least a little bit.
And honestly, what better options do you have at this point? Do you truly believe Sheldon Keefe is going to come in and be better instantly? Like, I know he's a great AHL coach. There's no denying that he's been a great coach at every level he's coached at, but it's the NHL. I feel like he'd get... The Leafs aren't going to be better next year than they were this year because they are going to lose a guy like Gardner and possibly a guy like Johnsson. And it would be kind of unfair for a new coach to catch that flack. I think Babcock was a better coach than Game 7 shows. And hopefully the special teams will sort of round out. Because 5-on-5, they were actually quite good. For the most part. With the exception of the deployment issue. But again, that's just a one issue. So.
Yeah. And, you know, it's something that can be resolved. And I think us being Toronto fans and, you know, taking in a lot of Toronto media, everybody wants to have their own take, their own spin on it. So some people like to jump the gun a bit and start talking about a narrative that might not be there. And honestly, I think, you know, the longer things go, I think Babcock's is just gonna get better. And like once the season starts, especially if they have success without players like Dermott and stuff, I think a lot of people will forget about Game 7. Like it'll just be a memory. You know,
Yeah.
it sucks that it happens, but it is what it is. We gotta live with it now and move on.
Yeah, but on one bright side, for Leafs Nation, the Marlies are undefeated in the playoffs right now in the Calder Cup playoffs. I believe they are 7-0, just swept the second round as well. Because I think the first round is a best of three, perhaps.
Something like that.
Yeah,
Isn't
so
it
they.
best of five?
Yeah, so best of five in the division finals and best of seven for the rest. And so they're 7-0, have swept the second round now, and which is impressive for where this team was at not too long ago. Like midway through the season before they got Hutchinson, they were not doing well at all. Like, they were very good 5-on-5, but goaltending was sinking them, and they didn't have the skill that they had when they won the Calder Cup last year.
They remind me a lot of St. Louis in a way, but obviously there's different characteristics to those two teams, but it's definitely a comparable in my estimation. And it's really nice to see them doing well. And guys like Rasmus Sundin and Jeremy Throckle have really been showing what they're worth. It makes me excited for the future, and very excited to see them up in the NHL. And it gives me good thoughts because at some point, especially with the Dermott news, you might see a defenseman make their way up to the NHL.
Yeah, and Rasmus Sandin, 7 points in seven playoff games so far, all assists, but still showing that offensive value that he has in the playoffs. And with the Travis Dermott news, I know some people were thinking like he has an outside chance of making the team next year, and same with Timothy Liljegren. I think that's because Dermott bounced back and forth between left and right side, finished the year on the right of Gardner. I think this opens the door for either Sandin or Liljegren, depending on which side the hole's on, to make the team out of camp.
It definitely does. And if you think about it, Gardner's not going to be back either, so there
Yeah,
might be
but
two spots.
Rosen was looking like he might be taking that spot, because I think they wanted the pairs to be Riley someone, Dermot Muzzin, Rosen someone, or Muzzin on the left, Dermot on the right. So it might be the hole on the right side that is available. So that seems like it would be going to Timothy Liljegren if that opportunity comes up.
That would be what I would do just because he's the right-handed shot. And then you give a guy like Rasmus Sundin time to develop in the minor leagues and, you know, so
Yeah.
when he does come up, because he's going to be coming up sooner rather than later, I would assume. Like, maybe not right away next season, but if there's an injury of some sort, I wouldn't be surprised to see him.
Yeah.
So,
And the Leafs do have still other guys with a left-handed shot in the Marlies as well, other than Sandin. I know Andreas Borgman does. I know I've heard that he's had a bit of a rougher go in the AHL than they would have liked. At very least last season, I haven't heard too much about him this season, so I'm planning on going back and rewatching some old AHL games from this season to sort of evaluate that myself, because I wasn't able to watch too many this season. But yeah, either way, the Marlies are looking very good this year, and if you're I know a lot of people are unhappy with who's in the conference finals. So if you're looking for some good hockey to watch still with the something that you have invested in it, watch the Marlies. It's on the Leafs channel. Or you can get AHL TV. You can get either a day pass or the whole playoffs for, I can't remember the price. They've reduced their prices. They used to be astronomical and outrageous. They're not that anymore. I think they've brought them down since then.
I think it's like something like $25 or something. I don't know.
Yeah, for the whole playoffs, I think it is. And I was considering about getting just a team pass for the Marlies next season. I think it's hair over $50. So still a little pricey for just one team. But
it's better than not being able to watch them.
Yeah, if you do value watching AHL hockey. And I think I'm going to try and get some tickets to the third round at some point, depending on when I can get work off.
Same here. I kind of want to see a game live, because a lot of my friends that go to college and live in Toronto, they go to all the games, and it's like, they can get pretty decent tickets for pretty decent prices. And like, knowing what Coca-Cola Arena looks like, or Coliseum, or whatever they're calling it these days, it's actually a pretty nice place to see a game. So I'm curious to see if I can get tickets. If not, I'll just, you know, watch it on TV or something. Yeah, like
or
that.
You can find streams on Reddit or something, I'm sure. That's how I watched the Game 7 last year for the Calder Cup. So Marlies are doing well. And back to the NHL a little bit. Second round just finished. First game of the first round is Carolina-Boston tonight. What did you think of the second round?
I enjoyed it. It was really fun to watch. Some questionable refereeing at some points.
Very questionable, yep.
Yeah, including last night's game against San Jose and Colorado. But I thought all the games were really entertaining. Even the New York Islanders series, I thought every game was entertaining from start to finish, although it was a sweep. And you can't really ask for much more than that.
My second favorite team in the NHL is the Carolina Hurricanes. I've made that obvious throughout the season, and I've said for the past three seasons, this is the year that they make the playoffs. And finally, I'm right. So it's nice to sort of see them make the playoffs with the sort of storyline that they've had this year with the storm surge and a bunch of jerks, obviously. And they have a just great decor and just a fun team to watch and analytical darlings.
Yep. Do you think they'll give Boston a hard time in the Eastern Conference Finals?
In March, I said I'm taking Carolina over any of the Metro teams, no matter who they face, because at that point, the Metro race was still like within points of each other, so they could have been facing any one of the Washington, Pittsburgh, or New York. And that prediction came to fruition. So, but Boston, I think they sort of match Carolina 5-on-5. Carolina might have a slight edge, but Boston wins in special teams department and goaltending. So I know the Vegas money is on Carolina, but if I were a betting man, I'd take the odds against my and place money on Boston for that series.
I think I'm with you on that, because I said if Boston can manage to make it past the second round, like, it's their Stanley Cup to win, unless you get a team like San Jose or St. Louis, which for a second felt like that neither of them would make it past the second round themselves. And then all of a sudden, now you're in this position where you got, you know, two solid teams. Like, the Western Conference Finals is going to be very exciting to watch. The Eastern Conference Finals, I have a feeling that Carolina's going to give Boston a hard time, but I don't know how hard of a time. But it just makes me think as a Leaf fan, like, oh, shit, imagine if they would have won that game 7.
Yeah.
Because it's definitely a winnable matchup, as you were pointing out, for Boston. And when you got, like, a first power play unit that goes Marchand, Bergeron, and Pastrnak, like, you can't go wrong because you can't really match up. Like, even if you got somebody like Sebastian Aho, he doesn't really have a lot of players to play with.
Yeah, and I know a lot of people's models for predictions are quite differing. So, Manny Elk, at Manny Elk on Twitter, he's the one that created Corsica, the website, and he has Boston St. Louis winning. Dom Lecisions of The Athletic has Boston and San Jose winning. And MoneyPuck.com has St. Louis, Carolina winning. So, like, those three models, very differing outcomes across the board. So, it's going to be close, I think. I think Boston might be... if anyone runs away with it, I think it might be Boston over Carolina. But that said, Martin Jones could just turn into the Martin Jones we know this season again and just flub everything instead of being an okay goaltender with one night that he made, like, what was it, 58 saves?
Something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, I think my picks for this one are going to be Boston, and I really don't know what to do on the West, because I think San Jose is the better team, but Martin Jones is such a flaw, and Aaron Dell, of course, is such a flaw in that lineup that could sink possibly one of the best. Oh, sorry, one moment.
You're tuned in to Last Word Radio. Last Word on sports.com. And that is the last word.
All right. Sorry about that. We're back. I was just saying I really don't know who to take in the West, in the Western Conference Finals, because, yeah, Martin Jones and Aaron Dell could sink that team, which is such a good roster in all facets of the game except goaltending. And I think St. Louis, well, especially with Jordan Binnington, I think is better in that area and still has a good roster in front of them.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I think, if anything, it's going to be an entertaining series, but watch. I think Martin Jones will pull something out of his behind and just play like an exceptional goaltender. But then again, like you were saying, like, it's such a weak point too, because when he's at his worst, it's not good for the team. And it would be a shame, especially for somebody like Joe Thornton, who's been so close to winning a cup so many times, and I'd hate to see him lose another chance at that just because of goaltending issues. So, really, I think that series is poised to go 7 games no matter who wins. So I have a feeling neither team's going to give up an inch, especially with a big and, like, tough team like St. Louis and, like you were saying about San Jose, like, their roster is just great, and they're all facets of the game except goaltending. So it'll be fun to see what happens there. Like, the Boston series, like, you know, I think anything can happen there as well. But then again, like, I think Boston's the better team. So, like, I wouldn't be surprised if they won, but I wouldn't be surprised if they lost. But I think for sure... it's going to be interesting to watch them last.
Yeah, Carolina's sort of built around this whole analytics thing. At very least, that's what they've been showing. Their possession was number two this season in the regular season. I think they had the best expected goals differential or expected goals for percentage, whichever you prefer to use. And San Jose was first in possession, and I think second in that respective area, in the expected goals area. So, like, you're seeing these teams that are doing well in advanced stats areas succeeding in both the regular season and the playoffs. And I know that since, I don't know if our listeners know who Eric Tulsky is, but he's an incredibly smart man. Came up with the theory or the ideas of the transition and sort of proved that zone exits and entries lead to more shots on goal for your team. He was hired, I think, 3 seasons ago by the Carolina Hurricanes. And since then, they've been fantastic in this respective area. They've just been... Their PDO, which is basically the luck stat, has been terrible. Like, their shooting percentage has been low, and their save percentage has been low. Which is weird for the shooting percentage, because they have one of the higher expected goals for in the NHL. So is it like, are they just getting unlucky for an incredibly long stretch of time, or are they unable to finish their chances because of something we don't measure? And then goaltending, we all know, has been just bad in Carolina in recent years. Like, Cam Ward, Scott Darling, Peter Mrazek, and Curtis McElhinney currently. Those two have been okay. Still not bona fide starters in this NHL.
Mm-hmm. So it definitely paints a picture of their struggles there too. Although, if they're winning games, I don't think you care if they're bona fide starters or not. So
yeah, and goaltendings are so weird. They can get hot on a whim. They can... it's so different from year to year, even like month to month. I saw this tweet yesterday by @NNStats. The hardest part of following hockey is remembering which goalies are good and which ones are bad this year. And she said this was tweeted on December 10th this year. It's like, this tweet is... the reason I'm tweeting this is because the Devils let in 5 goals last night. But I saw someone be like, well, what do you expect when you start Corey Schneider? And it's like, oh, yes. Wait, what? Because, like, the year before, he was actually quite good. I actually can't remember when he was good, but I feel like Corey Schneider is not someone you instantly think when you think worst goalie in the league.
Yeah.
It just changes on such an easy basis. Because before the Leafs got Curtis McElhinney, he was like a career backup, I think career 905, career 901, something like that. Mm-hmm. And then since after that, he's like a 920 something in that time. And with the Leafs, he was almost like around the 930s. It was unreasonable to expect that he would maintain that. And he kind of did. But yeah, goalies are a weird beast. They can go hot, they can go cold at any moment's notice. And it can just sink your team or carry your team farther than it should.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a very interesting storyline to look out for in the next 2 rounds of the playoffs as we near the end of them. So, you know, the only bona fide goalie, really, if you think about it, is Tuukka Rask. And like you were saying,
yeah,
like not everybody thinks as Tuukka is a great goalie, but then again, he is a starter.
And you know, I didn't even think he had that great a season. Honestly, going into the Leaf series, I thought they should have been starting Yaroslav Halak. I thought Halak had a fantastic season. It's not that Rask had a bad season. I thought he had a fine season this year. But Halak, who just came off one of the worst teams in goaltending, the New York Islanders in the 2017-18 season. They had awful goaltending between Halak and Price, or Grice, rather. And then comes in and is just a, like, probably the best backup in the NHL, who probably could have fought for a starter job.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of crazy just how things work. And, like that tweet was saying, it's just on the fly. Like, it's a weird beast, and it's hard to predict, like, you know. But then again, there are some people that are good at predicting certain things that we both know, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, and sort of keeping on the topic of analytics, but moving away from hockey right now, I think you know where I'm going, is in jeopardy this for the past little while, unless you've been living under a rock. You've heard of James Holzhauer, and he's just been dominating Jeopardy. And he holds the top five single-day records for most money. He holds all five of them and is beating his own records now. And I know that it's been encouraging me to watch Jeopardy again. I used to when I was a lot younger with my parents. But, like, I'm actually being drawn in by this guy shattering records. But some people do not feel that way.
Like, really, to those people, I say, he is inventing a new way of playing the game. Because, like, a lot of people come in and play the game, and then they go and do the $200 answers.
Yeah.
But
they go
him,
in order. They go in order, yeah, as you'd sort of expect.
Yeah, but what he'll do is he'll go for the most expensive, which when it's not daily double, it's $1,000,
and then yeah, he'll and go. The theory behind that is, he's a better for a gambler that you, for those of you who don't know, his theory is to get the most quote unquote chips, so the most money at the start, so when he does get those daily doubles, he has the most to bet, and is able to maximize his profits there.
Yeah. And this guy, he's like a walking encyclopedia because obviously in order to get an answer right, you need to know the answer. And he's very smart how he does this. And really, what I always find funny is you get the two other contestants that he's playing against. They're going into Final Jeopardy with like maybe $5,000 each. He's going in there with like $50K. And then like if he wants to make a bet, he can make a bet. And no matter what, he can beat these people because he's got so much chips, which speaks to his theory.
Yeah, and he's won so much at this point that he has started donating the winnings to charity. But, so this is a quote from someone tweeted out, and I saw quote tweets about it, and here's an excerpt from the article. People seem to not care that Holzhauer Street reflects the same grim, data-driven approach to competition that has spoiled, among other sports, baseball, where it has given us the shift, wins above replacement, swing trajectories, and other statistical valid but unholy event in but unholy inventions. Like the number crunchers who now rule the national pastime, Holzhauer substitutes cold calculating odds maximization for spontaneous play. His idea is to select and respond correctly to harder big dollar clues on the show. And so people are not happy that he is going with this approach, and I don't understand why. So I actually responded to that tweet myself, and where am I? Let me read to you what I have, if my computer will load.
So internet is the death of all of us.
Oh, well, that loads. Anyways, I have another tweet open, and it's Bromley's column. Math puts favorite games in quote-unquote Jeopardy, so it's play on words. Math is ruining everything. First, it was my grade point average, then it was poker, then baseball, basketball, now it's ruining Jeopardy. So kind of some satire in there with his grade point average. I think this guy seems like a fine writer, but I think the approach was incorrect. And James himself tweets out the link and says, ironically, competitions were so much better back when no one tried to win them. And yeah, so, and here are my thoughts. It's like, oh no, the guy is giving himself the best chance to win. Watching Holzhauer is exciting, watching him break records. What's wrong with seeing someone dominate the game that we haven't seen since Ken Jennings? And then I'm like, as for stats ruining sports, they're giving themselves the best chance to win. And isn't that the point, to win? And James still has to answer all the questions correctly but to win this much. That's the point of Jeopardy, to answer the questions correctly and quickly. He still has to do that. I don't get why people are unhappy with this.
I think if you look at it, I think a lot of those people are jealous because they didn't come up with his ideas, his theories. They don't have his, you know, the knowledge that he has. I think most of it's rooted out of jealousy because, like you were saying, like, there's nothing wrong with trying to win something, and it's not like he's cheating the system. All he's really doing is inventing a new system. And we didn't get pissed off when people like Einstein figured out, you know, how to do things with the scientific equations. We didn't get mad when somebody invented the car. You know what I mean? I just think, but it's not like he's inventing the wheel. He's just taking a different approach. Like,
And Brad Rutter, who's the all-time highest grossing earner from Jeopardy, and Ken Jennings, who was the one who had the 74-day run, I think it was, back in the day, both love that he's doing this. I don't think records that he's breaking, I don't think anyone's unhappy that he's breaking them. Like, what's the old saying? Records were made to be broken?
Yep. And, like, you can't get mad, like, and it makes for interesting TV. I bet you since Holzhauer's been on there, their ratings went from being, like, not nice, they're pretty good, to being, like, oh, crap, this is a good show again, right?
Yeah, the ratings are up because of him. Like, they're not to the point where when Ken Jennings was on it, but they're still up a lot from where they were before he was on the show.
Mm-hmm. And you can't really be upset about that, especially if you're a lover of the show. You like to watch it every night after you eat your dinner. So, you know what I mean? I think, you know, people should be happy that he's doing this. Should be proud. Especially when he's, like you were saying, donating all the money, most of the money to charity, right? It's not like he just living in money, like bathing in it. Because if you're a gambler and if you're a professional gambler, odds are he didn't need the money from that show to start off.
A successful one, at very least. If you're not very successful, then yeah, you might need some money. But mm-hmm. his wife is also, I can't remember what she specializes in. I think some sort of history, has some sort of history degree and has a job in that. So it's not like they are not well off. So yeah, it's good to see he obviously kept the first amount, because like having a cool meal is nice to have for your family, and but at a certain point he's just like, I don't need any more. I'm sure he's just on it to break records still. I think it's incredibly interesting to see, and it's sort of like watching Sidney Crosby play. It's like you're watching the best be the best at the top of his game. drawing a comparison to Jeopardy and the NHL. And it's like, no one ever said that Sidney Crosby is ruining hockey because he's too good at it.
Mm-hmm. Except if you're like, let's say a Washington Capitals fan. That's something saved for another day, I guess.
Yeah. So, I thought that was a really good topic that we wanted to bring up on here. This very loosely relates to what we were talking about today with analytics in hockey and how it's affecting areas outside. It's just giving himself the best chance to win, and that's what sports teams use it to do as well. And that's the goal of sports teams, is to win.
Mm-hmm. Much agreed.
All right, I think we'll wrap it up for today, unless you have anything else you want to add, Christian?
Not today, no. Besides the fact that I hope the Raptors do well, and the Marlies do too.
Of course.
But that's all I got to add today, and tune back in next time to the Leaf and Magic podcast.
All right, thanks for listening.
You're tuned in to Last Word Radio. Last Word on sports.com. And that is the last word.